This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Checkpoint Intimates. Welcome back to another Checkpoint Intimate. This is Archer and I'm joined by Sav.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Yeah? Ready to get intimate?
Oh. Ooh. Buy me a drink first. Ooh. Jesus. Ooh.
Right? Today we're going to be talking about VR, but in particular how people are using VR outside of video games and the experiences that they're crafting around that. What are some instances in which you've seen VR being used in these ways?
So, I've been really interested in VR and accessibility for a while. So, mainly I've been looking into how it works for mental health issues.
Yep. Because it's been used in like physical rehabilitation for a little while now, but we're only now really looking at it from using it as for mental health support as well.
Yeah. So, it was used and is still being used fairly often for stroke patients.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can get grandma set up on the, you know, old VR machine, which has been really good because that's actually the physical side of rehabilitation. So it's like user led, so they can do it whenever they want. Yep. As well. And thankfully, because like it's getting so big in gaming, like VR technology is getting a fair bit cheaper to produce.
Far cheaper. Well. And we can just implement consumer solutions into medical grade use cases.
Yeah.
As well.
It might not be Melbourne based, but I played it at a Melbourne VR festival. It's called Edie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about living a life with Alzheimer's. You put on, they have their own little headsets made out of cardboard and you just download the app on your phone,
yep.
Put it on and you basically go through your day as if you were living with Alzheimer's. So, you know, you think you're going in one direction, like towards the bathroom sort of thing. And
yep.
Then suddenly you're in a closet and you're really disoriented and you don't know what's happening. And that was really, really powerful. Like, it was very, very interesting.
It's an excellent way to engage people in experiences that they are unfamiliar with. And that's what VR is about for the most part. It can be used in ways that aren't particularly tasteful.
Yeah,
however,
so
we
have
a new
story. Then you get, like, the empathy, like, sort of fetishization.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, if I just experience this, then I don't have to do anything about it because I feel bad.
We had a news story on that topic just this week, which was for the CEO sleep out.
Yeah, so in Sydney, for St. Vincent de Paul's, instead of spending money on actual homeless people, they developed a sleeping out game. It was basically what it was like to be homeless through VR.
Homelessness, the VR experience.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you could just go out and speak to somebody, right?
Yeah, it's... Of course, people are misusing technology like this and almost appropriating experiences that they don't have any right to be presenting as an experience. These are actually people's lives that you're selling.
I feel like it's when people do that thing where they put on a hijab for a day and then go out into the city and like try and get people's attention to like abuse them and then are like, I truly know the Muslim experience.
It's like, oh my God.
No, you don't. Why don't you just ask somebody who is Muslim rather than staging this big whole social media thing? It's like, it's fetishization of other people's, like, trauma.
I can't believe that they did that. So I wouldn't even know what you would put in a VR experience of homelessness. And I can't believe someone even considered that something that
It'd be that stereotypical thing, I bet, where you like you look down at your hands and you're wearing fingerless gloves and your fingernails are a bit dirty and you have to like look in bins. Like the things that...
And sit outside Flagstaff.
Yeah. Or Flinders Street, it used to be. And it's like, we live in a country where homelessness is a massive problem and this is what they're sort of doing.
This is what... Yeah. And the CEO sleep out is becoming more of a joke.
Yeah.
Because you're not raising... You're trying to raise awareness, but you're not actually instituting any change based on these actions. CEOs have the power to actually make proper sweeping changes to what's happening, and it doesn't. It obviously has no effect. They're now using it to play games.
Edie was interesting because it was giving you an experience of what it's like to be in somebody else's mental condition, which is very hard to implement in real life.
Obviously.
Whereas with homelessness, I feel like that is a situation where instead of trying to, like, live the experience and realize how bad it is, you should just acknowledge that it is bad.
Yeah, believe people who have experienced it don't need something to tell you so.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not getting down on trying to engage people empathetically using this technology. I think that's a great idea. But
I think calling it the ultimate empathy machine, which is what a lot of online research sort of talks about, is a bit off.
Yeah. Ultimate empathy machine is listening to people when they talk about it.
Yeah.
And actually attempting to be empathetic.
We are all the ultimate empathy machines.
Yes. The technology is a disconnect.
So basically what you want to be doing if you want to create empathetic experiences with VR is you want to take an experience that you cannot get just from talking to people. And one of the ones that I've seen implemented really well was a girl mirror look.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it is meant to simulate what gender dysphoria feels like.
Yep.
So you put it on and they got a lot of males in for the study. And basically had them wander around the apartment in game and stare into a mirror. And in the mirror was a female, whereas the person who was wearing the VR headset would identify as male.
Yes.
And that can be both great for getting the idea of gender dysphoria out and also as a way to alleviate it for people who want to transition to female as well. Like, it can really help psychologically.
Yeah, to be able to see that. You see yourself how you want to see yourself.
Yeah, alleviate some gender dysphoria, essentially.
It's an excellent application in order to try and get people to actually experience these hardships.
I mean, shockingly, I'm super into trans rights.
Shocking. Never would have guessed.
Yeah. And, like, you know, that would have been, if I had done it, that would have been dysphoria in a different way for me because I would have been seeing a feminine body, whereas I present as male. Mm-hmm. So it would have been approaching it from a different aspect, which is something that can be beneficial for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's entirely dependent on why you're approaching the situation. Yeah. Presenting something for the CEO sleep out as like a, hey, you can try homelessness for a night is a completely different
trial.
Yeah. Is a completely different intention than trying to help people empathize with the plights of others in order to assist those people. I'm arguing with myself because it seems like a fine line that we're arguing here.
Yeah,
we're
cherry picking
why one is wrong and one isn't.
It's very, very hard to sort of make the distinction there. But I think with good intentions and with something you desperately cannot explain, like if you asked me to explain gender dysphoria to you, like in a way that you would bodily understand,
mm-hmm.
I would not be able to. I'd be like, I don't know, it's and disconnect.
You physically cannot experience it unless you are experiencing it.
Yes.
And that's not the case of homelessness.
No, absolutely not. Like, it is always important with these kinds of projects as well to get people who have experienced a thing onto the development team. And I feel like if they'd actually gotten some homeless people, some people who have previously been homeless on the CEO thing, I feel like if they'd done that, they would have been like, this is a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spend the money on actually helping homeless people.
And that, and in particular, that's a sore point for it as well, because it's at its heart a problem of money.
Yeah.
And people have donated that money to assist these people, and then it's gone to this VR experience for CEOs. And that just, it all reeks of just being wrong.
Pretty much. It just, I always talk about this, but it reeks of capitalism. It's terrible.
But we see VR experiences, I think a VR experience is more common than a game, I feel.
Yes.
And a lot of games that are presented these days are more an experience and are better suited to being labeled an experience.
Yeah. I mean, like, VR, as it, like, technically exists, goes all the way back to the 19th century with, like, the big panoramic things that were meant to make you feel like you were at the wall that it was being painted.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, wall to wall. It was meant to, like, make you feel immersed in it. So, like, we've had VR for a while. And I would feel that, yes, it's very, very good for games, but I feel like in terms of accessibility, it's good for a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have just the headset motion control, you can start making games and programs and things for people who are paraplegic.
Yep. This is you enabling people to do things that they couldn't do on their own.
As technology should always be used for, it should be used to enable people to do things that they couldn't previously do. Like, it shouldn't be used as, like, this sort of money-making, cash-grabbing thing. It shouldn't be used as this, oh, look how cool I am with my new technology. It should just be a thing where it's like, we are helping people with this.
I think I have a summary for how it differs with the CEO sleep out. The CEO sleep out feels like a circle jerk. It's just, look at what we've done, congratulations, we've felt the experience. And the whole... It just reflects the nature of the CEO sleep out, how it is and how it's always existed, of not really being beneficial to anyone other than the people participating.
I think if your experience doesn't prompt people to go out and change a certain aspect of their life, then it's probably not doing its job.
Unless they already prescribe to.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the intention behind art in general. And video games should have a message that they're trying to present as well to the audience.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see so many games flop over that because they have the potential.
I mean, that's my problem with a lot of modern horror games. It's like a lot of the older horror games. It's like, here's what depression does to people. Here's what guilt does to people. Here's your inner demons.
Silent Hill's an excellent example of that.
Yes, I love Silent Hill.
Silent Hill 2 is full of allegories for different mental conditions.
Yeah, and Silent Hill 2 doesn't really have that good-evil dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. It's basically, like, most of the enemies are allegory for his sexual frustration, other than Pyramid Head, which is his own masculine drive.
I could talk for hours on Pyramid Head, but, like, there is significant evidence to show that he is also a guidance as well,
mm-hmm.
and how that, like, the toxic masculinity can also be a guidance for how you inform getting over your own guilt.
I can't wait until we get an email being like, you're reading too much into this. It's just a game. There's no art involved. Were you on?
No, shush. For those who don't know, I have a Silent Hill tattoo on my leg, so
lovely.
I'm really into it.
Whereas I'm really into reading things that aren't there, apparently.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I recently played Resident Evil 7, mm-hmm. and I got through it with my housemate, and we were just both like, what did this say apart from poor people are scary?
It was really poorly done, and even from a VR experience,
it was very pretty.
It struggled with, like, the biggest fundamental of horror, which is you need to frame it so the player can't leave.
Yes.
They could just walk out. Like, the logical thing would be to just leave.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to write a reason for them to stay.
That's the really good thing about Silent Hill 2, was his reason to leave was he did not want to. He wanted to be there. He wanted to be in Silent Hill.
But this, we digress, though. This isn't a...
Yes, this is not VR.
This is not a podcast about Silent Hill, although it could be.
You
can request it in the future, and we'll talk about Silent Hill for hours on end. But thank you very much, Sav, for talking to me about VR and VR experiences.
No problem.
It's been lovely having you. This has been another Checkpoint Intimate.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.